This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. Hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. And Mike and I are trying to get to the bottom of which one of the upsets yesterday was the biggest one. And yesterday, Mike, we had two of the three biggest upsets in the NFL season. I know we reached the halfway point with exactly 136 games played, but the two biggest upsets in the NFL season, according to Caesars Sportsbook, was yesterday the Jacksonville Jaguars, who were 15.5-point dogs at home to the Buffalo Bills, being able to pull off that win. And then, of course, the Dallas Cowboys, who were 10-point favorites against the Denver Broncos, ended up getting blasted 30-16. And, Mike, it's crazy to think, but the game wasn't even as close as the final score, because the Dallas Cowboys had two garbage time touchdowns with about 5 minutes left. It was 30-0. So that's how thorough that beatdown was from the Denver Broncos. And for my money, that was the biggest surprise in the Week 9 slate, how the Dallas Cowboys got outclassed out at home against a team that felt like they were punting on the season with the move that they made at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I guess that's the biggest difference for me, Chris, between what we saw with the Dallas Cowboys and what happened to the Los Angeles Rams at home in their game, right? Two of the best teams in the NFC, two teams that we talked about in the top four probably in the NFL overall, is that Titans team has had a couple of marquee wins as of late. They've been surging. We know they just lost Derrick Henry, but there were no signs of life for the Denver Broncos. And Chris, I think this is a reminder, because ultimately I don't believe that this is going to be a long-term trend for the Dallas Cowboys, but I was reminded of two things. One, that defense still foundationally is not going to be strong for you all four quarters. It is going to be timely, but there were plenty of things that Denver was able to take advantage of with far lesser personnel. And on the other side, there may not be a player as important to their team outside of a quarterback as Tyron Smith is to that Dallas Cowboys offense, because their all-pro left tackle was out yesterday. Terrence Steele went over to man that left side, and it was a noticeable difference in Dak Prescott and what his comfort level in the pocket looked like.
No question about it. And the thing that probably surprised me the most is that the Denver Broncos were able to get after that Dallas Cowboys offense with just a four-man rush. And we're not accustomed to seeing that, because that offensive line is usually so good. But as you mentioned, Tyron Smith's absence was one that loomed large in yesterday's performance. But overall, I think the Dallas Cowboys just came out flat. Offense, defense, special teams made a play, but ultimately the Bach punt ends up working against them and gives the Denver Broncos a fresh set of downs, which they took full advantage of and end up scoring on that drive. So it's one of those situations where I think, coming off of the bye week, reading some of your press clippings, 2 weeks of people telling you how good you were, and then, of course, Dak Prescott not necessarily having the live game reps. You know, he didn't practice in a full capacity on Wednesday, was full on Thursday and Friday. But still, we're talking about the course of 2 weeks. There was a little bit of rust there. They just seemed a little bit off, and the Denver Broncos took full advantage of it. Vic Fangio clearly didn't allow his team to have a lapse or lack intensity, because they made the move to trade Von Miller at the deadline. That team came out there with something on their mind, and they took it to the Dallas Cowboys, and the Cowboys just didn't have it in them to respond.
Now, I do enjoy this response here, Kenny Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio, from Vic Fangio, who pointed out after the game, because the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott had been blitzed at the second highest rate of any team in the NFL. 33% of the time, so a third of all dropbacks, teams were blitzing the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott. They were blitzed a season low 14% of the time against the Denver Broncos, and their head coach Vic Fangio said teams just haven't played them the right way, in reference to the Cowboys. Chris, Vic Fangio is an outstanding defensive coordinator. We'll see how he continues to fare as a head coach. Not exactly revolutionary, this idea that, hey, if we can get home with just four people, Taryn, you know what, at the quarterback, we're going to be pretty good at football.
Yeah, I mean, this is not something that's new, right? I mean, this is what you have to do when you're facing elite quarterbacks. You have to be able to rush with four, and you drop seven in the coverage, and you can't let the quarterback know the types of looks that you're having pre-snap. Otherwise, they're going to tear you apart. That's why defensive coordinators always preach pre-snap disguise when it comes to the secondary, the safeties in particular. Don't let them know whether you're playing cover two or whether you're playing post-safety coverage. You got to mix it up with them. You can't allow Dak Prescott to have a clear picture and to know where he's going with the football before the ball is even snapped. So that's what the Denver Broncos secondary did. That's what their defense did overall. And you give credit to them because they were able to actually execute that game plan, and they neutralized the Dallas Cowboys offense. The thing that's surprising is the Cowboys weren't able to run the football too. Like you would think, even with Terrence Steele stepping in for Tyron Smith, that offensive line would still figure out a way to be able to run the ball with Zeke and Tony Pollard, but they weren't able to get any movement at the point of attack. And conversely, the Denver Broncos offensive line did, to the tune of 190 yards rushing on 41 carries. Mike, you know this as well as I do. Anytime the team runs the ball 41 times, that's usually going to result in a dub in the National Football League. And that's what the Denver Broncos did. They dominated time of possession. The Cowboys had the ball for less than 19 minutes. That's unbelievable to me. So, I mean, a game tilted in the Denver Broncos' favor. Their defense made some plays, some key stops early on in their own territory, and that ultimately ended up being the catalyst for them to be able to play downhill on the Dallas Cowboys. And Mike McCarthy and that coaching staff didn't have any answers as to how they could turn the tide.
Nope, that is still a defense that we have to remember. Very young. They've been successful early because Micah Parsons is crazy talented, because Javon Diggs is insanely talented. And we saw that on display. But Dan Orlovsky, our ESPN NFL analyst, put out some great stuff about how the Denver Broncos used bigger bodies, put people in motion, made young guys look young, hesitate, and took advantage of it by blasting them right down State Street, like Chris Canty just said here. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Insurance is proud to support veterans with its annual Keys to Progress vehicle giveaway program. Now celebrating 9 years of donating vehicles, helping veterans in need. Learn more at keystoprogress.com. So the Cowboys were disappointing, but ultimately, think this is going to be the exception, not the rule, especially as this team gets healthier. Resting Tyron Smith right now, the right choice. Who else was disappointing, though, in this NFL weekend? Let's head to the Goodyear hotline here. Jay in Arizona, you're on Canty and Golic Jr. Who was most disappointing this weekend?
Oh, man, coming from a diehard Panther fan, here we go again with Sam Darnold. How many chances are we going to give this guy? It's time to pull the plug. I mean, we don't have anybody in the back, you know, that's a good backup, but Jesus Christ. I mean,
it was a for sure. And Chris, I can understand the frustration, though, because what a lot of us are seeing is, we talked about this, Adam Gase somewhere right now, smiling wide. Sam Darnold has a lot of his own issues. He had him coming out of Southern Cal. He has always been a guy that has been talent, but very, very raw. And everyone around the NFL thought they could fix it, the Panthers included. This is a reminder that he was probably more to blame for what went on with the Jets than we gave him credit for.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're at the top of the league lead in interceptions, that's not a good thing. And for Sam Darnold, he's trying to prove that the Jets' experience wasn't his fault and ultimately it rests at the feet of Adam Gase in organizational failures. But yeah, this is a team that's still searching for their long-term solution at quarterback. And as the season continues to unfold, it's becoming painfully obvious that Sam Darnold ain't that dude. Now, the problem for the Carolina Panthers is they're going to be on the hook for his fifth-year option. They decided to exercise that this offseason. That's going to pay Sam Darnold in 2022 to the tune of $20-plus million. So, I mean, that's a large, large number for David Tepper to stomach for a guy that's probably going to end up being your backup quarterback. But, yeah, I mean, right now, this is going to be a one-year tryout for Sam Darnold. Phillip Walker, I don't know if you necessarily want to turn it over to him. I think you still have to try to get as many answers, get as much of a sample size from Sam Darnold as you possibly can this year so you can have a clear evaluation on him. But it's becoming painfully obvious to me that he's not the answer for the Carolina Panthers long-term at quarterback. He just keeps throwing the ball to the other team. And Matt Rhule and all of his teammates are tired of making excuses from him. I'm not sure if you saw this yesterday, Mike, but there was an exchange on the sideline between him and Robbie Anderson. And, you know, those two were former teammates with the Jets.
Ooh, yeah.
And Robbie Anderson was pretty fired up at Sam Darnold in terms of some of the mistakes that he's making. So there's no one else to blame for what we've seen with the turnovers other than Sam Darnold. He's got to find a way to get past that and to stop giving the ball to the other team. Otherwise, he's going to be relegated to backup status for the rest of his NFL career.
888-SAY-ESPN. 888-729-3776. We'll take more of your biggest disappointments from the NFL weekend. But coming up next, saying Sam Darnold ain't the guy in Carolina, not an overreaction by any stretch. We'll give you some real overreaction Monday coming up next here on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Danny Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, all guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline. And Mike, we've played 136 games out of the 272 that are on the NFL schedule for the 2021 season, expanded regular season. So we are just getting to the halfway point. And of course, it makes us stop, take inventory, and see exactly where teams are at, where individual players are at. And so I think it's a perfect time for us to dive into the NFL Overreaction Monday, midseason edition. And so I'm going to turn this thing over to our main guy, Devin Adu, Devin Kane, to run through a couple of line items here.
All right, Chris, let's start with you. The Browns are a better team without Odell Beckham Jr. Is that an overreaction?
No, it's not an overreaction, man. Listen, 14-15 with OBJ on the field, I think the record speaks for itself. And as my former coach Bill Parcells used to always say, the best players don't always make the best team, but the best team always wins. It's clear to me that the chemistry with the Cleveland Browns is better with OBJ not a part of that team. And so we'll end up ultimately seeing what the ceiling on this group can be. They're not a more talented team, but to me, they play a lot more cohesively. So I'm going to say, yeah, the Browns are a better team. Not an overreaction.
Not an overreaction. We've got too much evidence that says it. Baker Mayfield's QBR without OBJ is 63. With him is 44. I can't tell you why, but I can tell you that ceiling we just talked about with the Browns is much more dependent on the health of their offensive line and running backs, and does Myles Garrett and that defensive secondary continue to perform, in Myles Garrett's case, at defensive player of the year level, and in that secondary's case, enough to stymie passing attacks they'll see in that division like the Cincinnati Bengals.
Mike, I think I might know your answer being a former offensive lineman. Tyron Smith is the Cowboys' most important player. Is that an overreaction?
I'll say yes only because Zach Martin is their most important player. But once I take off my Zach Martin club leader hat here, Tyron Smith certainly got a case. And we've known, kind of like we just talked about with the Browns, this is a team where the foundation is being able to do it all, is being as varied and versatile as the Cowboys' offense has been. Because, Chris, every time we've talked about them, it's this offense is most dangerous because it can do everything well. And you can only do that when your foundation is strong. They've dealt with a bunch of injuries up front, but when you've got Zach and Tyron both in that lineup, you're solidified in ways that let it go. And without Tyron yesterday, it allowed them, despite being blitzed at the lowest percentage of the season for the Cowboys, to still have Dak Prescott pressured at a rate that made that whole passing game fall apart.
Yeah, Mike, I'm going to go ahead and say, yeah, Tyron Smith is the best position player. Even though Zach Martin is the best player on the team, I feel like Tyron Smith is more important. We saw yesterday that the Cowboys can't overcome his absence, and you saw the replacement-level player in Terrence Steele just wasn't able to get the job done. Even though we've seen Zach Martin out of that lineup before and his offense still being able to be productive, the same can't be said for Tyron Smith's absence. So I'm going to say he is the most important position player for the Dallas Cowboys, not an overreaction.
All right, Chris, the Patriots are going to win the AFC East. Is that an overreaction?
Ooh, it sure doesn't feel like it, not with the way that that defense is playing. I still think the Buffalo Bills are the class of the division, but I will say this, the way that the defense for the Patriots is going, it wouldn't surprise me if Bill Belichick finds a way, and with this AFC playoff picture being muddled up and all of these teams being right there, I think you got 11 teams in the conference that are over 500. It feels like this is one of those years that Bill Belichick can find some second-half magic in the season, and being able to bring Mac Jones along a little more, improve and add to the vertical passing game, I think that this is a dangerous team to watch. They still got two dates with the Buffalo Bills on their schedule, so I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility. I don't expect that the Bills will win the East, but I'm not going to sit here and say that that's an overreaction today based on how they've played the last 3 weeks.
I'm going to say this is an overreaction, if for nothing else than the sanity of Christine Lisi, our SportsCenter update anchor extraordinaire, who is over there writhing in pain right now. Christine, are you doing okay this morning here? Like, I wanted to do a wellness check on you at this point, too. Because it hasn't been great lately, I know, but I saw you physically in pain over to my left here. You know what, Christine? Honestly, this is the first time I was ever worried about having the dump button ready for Christine Lisi, because she's shaking with rage right now at what's happened with her Buffalo Bills. Christine, I do legitimately believe the Bills are still going to win this division. I think Mac Jones needs to stop twisting ankles and focus on playing quarterback, and I think this is all going to end up this way. I think the Patriots still got a shot in a very chaotic AFC to be a playoff team, but I think the division belongs to Buffalo. The Patriots are making moves. That's a recorded version of Christine Lisi's voice. You can tell because it's not shaking with rage right now here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. What else we got, Dev?
All right, let's do one more, guys. Mike, Jordan Love will not be the successor to Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. Is that an overreaction?
I don't think that's an overreaction.
Hmm.
Now, again, I think it's going to be unfair what we try and do to Jordan Love based off one game, Chris. And I know you can go back and say last year he wasn't even a backup for them, didn't dress for a lot of games in the season, his rookie year, all of that stuff. But I think this is going to be more about how complicated it's still going to be with Aaron Rodgers as they head towards this offseason and what his future looks like. But I feel like you can always kind of tell, and there's been nothing that we've heard publicly, privately, behind the scenes, or on the field like we saw last night, that gives you a ton of hope or inspires you much in what Jordan Love has brought to the table so far. We've seen plenty of first-round picks not work out in this organization, and I think it's just a lot of pressure coming from a place that's gone back-to-back Hall of Famers to expect him to live anywhere close to that.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that he's not going to be the successor to Aaron Rodgers. I'm going to say this is an overreaction. I mean, they drafted him in the first round for a reason. There's a plan for the organization to turn it over to Jordan Love at some point. We just don't know when that is. Like, we've seen teams in the past make the decision to draft successors when they have quarterbacks that are playing at really high levels. We saw that in New England with Tom Brady and Jimmy Garoppolo. But, I mean, you're talking about a guy that had a lot of Super Bowls on the resume before the organization decided they were going to ship the succession plan to a different team. I don't think that's going to be the case with the Green Bay Packers, even if Aaron Rodgers sticks around beyond this year. At some point, it will be Jordan Love. I just don't know that it's going to be in the 2022 years just based on what we've seen. But I think this is a little bit of an overreaction. Jordan Love will be the next starting quarterback after Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay.
All right, so we've got a lot to look forward to coming off this weekend. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The most disappointing player or team from this NFL weekend. Week 9 was a blur. But coming up next, the NFL weekend was chaotic. College football weekend set that tempo to start things off. Coming up next, do we have real concerns with the Alabama Crimson Tide? And does anyone want to play Purdue from here on out? That's next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline. And, Mike, that's where we got to go right now to bring on our friend, ESPN college football analyst Greg McElroy. And, Greg, I want to call it an upset by Purdue, but it's hard to do that when Sparty was only 3-point favorites going into that game. It felt like it was a spot where Purdue could pull off the upset. We know them to be giant killers. They took out Iowa early on in the season. They took care of business against the Michigan State Spartans. And what was your take on what happened in that ball game, in that particular matchup?
Well, I wasn't surprised, guys. I know, like you said, I mean, this was a letdown spot in the greatest sense of the word. When you think about it for Sparty, you get a comeback victory. Everyone's telling you how great you are. You're up to number 3. You go on the road. Purdue's 4-3, 5-3. How good are they? They're not great. They're fine. They're off. They're fine. Whatever. And then, boom, Purdue comes and hits you because they have great players at important spots. They have a game-changing wide receiver, and they have a game-changing edge defender. And if you have those two pieces right now in college football, you got big problems. And I saw a lot. There was a lot to like about what Kenneth Walker and what the offense was able to do for Michigan State, but the defense, they just had no answers when you really think about having to defend against that Purdue offense that has been somewhat inconsistent this year. So I can't say I was surprised at all. I thought it was a really difficult game for Michigan State to be at their very best. So the outcome was, I think, what a lot of us expected, at least that it followed the two programs closely.
Yes.
Greg, quick follow-up. What does this do for Michigan State with the college football playoff?
they're still in full control. I mean, everyone always freaks out when Bama loses a game and they only drop, like, two spots. So I think we're going to have a lot of people singing the same song this week when it comes to Michigan State. They were three last week, but how far can you really drop them? I mean, in order to drop a team, and this is going to sound like some crazy thought, Chris, and I know you and Michael are thoughtful guys and will understand this, but everyone always says, oh, they played bad, you got to drop them. They played bad, they stink, drop them, please drop them. Bama played bad, drop them. Ohio State played bad, drop them. Cincinnati played bad, drop them. Well, in order to drop teams, that means you must also move other teams up. And there weren't that many great performances last week that justify major jumps. So I actually think Michigan State, who came in at three last week, no, I think they're going to fall to five. Because you can't right now, based on what Cincinnati did last week against Tulsa, you can't justify saying, well, Cincinnati needs to move up into the top four. Can't do that. And you can't have them behind a Michigan team that they beat 2 weeks ago. So I think they're going to fall from three to five. Oregon slides up to three. Ohio State slides up to four. And that's pretty much all that ends up happening. So those that have kind of been critical of the committee in the past and saying they don't penalize teams enough, well, get ready, because you're about to be singing kind of an unusual song this week when Michigan State's probably only going to drop a spot or two.
Greg McElroy with us here on Canty and Golo Jr. And so that's what you think the top four is going to look like, with Georgia and Alabama staying put up top. Greg, Alabama edges out LSU, only 2014. We know it's a rivalry game. LSU with a lame duck head coach right now. Is it as simple as saying, hey, this is two teams with a lot of familiarity? Or are there things that the Tide legitimately have to be worried about down the stretch of the season?
No, I think it was it was a problem, Mike. I mean, I would love to try to sit here and tell you, oh, they're very correctable mistakes, but I would be lying if I told the offensive linemen just how easy it is to create opportunities in the offensive.
Oh, it sounds like we lost Greg. He's probably, if I actually know that sound like I think I do, he was getting either out of or into a car, and it clicked over onto the car. Greg, which was it? Were you getting out of or into a car and having it click onto the Bluetooth there?
What's funny is I turned off my car, but the Bluetooth usually stays connected, but it hated me talking about O-line play so much that it just cut off. No, and I look at it in all seriousness, man, like offensive line play can't get rectified overnight, and Alabama's had their fair share of struggles all year. The problem, though, Mike, is that the problems with the offensive line was on the edges, was on the right side of the offensive line in particular. This past week, it was not just the right side of the offensive line, it was internally along the offensive line, and it was their bona fide franchise left tackle, Evan Neal, who got beat five or six times throughout the course of the game in both run blocking and pass blocking. And if we're going to add insult to injury just a little bit further, their big 225-pound running back, who's a fifth-year senior, in Brian Robinson, who has been like an anchor in protection all year, he was getting beat like a drum in protection. So I think when protection struggles, that's not something that gets corrected overnight. And I don't know what they're going to do, because LSU is not some super dynamic pass rushing team. You know who is? Georgia. Mm. And you know who Bama has to play in a few weeks? Georgia. So I don't think that these are things that get fixed overnight. And I would be very, very concerned if I were a fan of the Crimson Tide, thinking that, man, I have a great quarterback and I got great skill on the outside, but man, my offensive line is not going to keep that jersey clean for very long against the Georgia Bulldogs.
Greg, I got to ask you about the game that College Game Day was at and Mike Golic Jr. was covering. That is Cincinnati and Tulsa. And since he looked like they were going to blow the doors off of Tulsa early with being able to get back-to-back-to-back three and outs from that defense, and then their offense outside of the turnover being able to have two scoring drives. So it didn't play out that way. An unimpressive win from Cincy, but a win nonetheless. But what is the Bearcats' path to the college football playoffs, being in that Final Four at the end of the season? What do they have to do, and what has to happen in front of them in order to have a shot at the playoff?
Well, they need help. I mean, there's no denying that. I mean, they need Ohio State to look real human the next few weeks, which I don't think Ohio State's as good as everyone's making them out to be right now. I think they're very capable and have a real high ceiling. But I think part of the good graces that they've been shown the last month of the year has in large part been due to playing against subpar competition. And I think this Ohio State team, while they have a ton of firepower, they also have a ton of inconsistencies. They can't consistently run the football. Their best player offensively, Garrett Wilson, who was out last week you could tell that he was missing, even though Jackson Smith and Jigba had a fantastic game. The offense just didn't click, especially in the red zone. So I think they're going to lose a game at some point. I think Michigan has already lost, but they have not fared well against Ohio State in the past. Michigan State showed that they have some problems on defense. So I think the winner of the Big Ten is actually going to have two losses, which opens the door for Cincinnati. I also think that Georgia, if they played Alabama right now, I think they would beat Alabama. I think they'd beat them soundly to the point where there wouldn't be any goodwill built up by Alabama in a close moral victory, even though I don't think that exists. People seem to think that if Bama plays Georgia close, that would be a feather in their cap. I don't do moral victories. So if Bama loses to Georgia, in my opinion, they're out, regardless of how tight the margin of that game may be. And then when you look at the Big 12, Baylor losing last week obviously helps. ACC, Wake Forest losing last week actually helps. Y'all, Cincinnati's in prime position. What they can't do, though, is unlike they've done the last few weeks, you can't play down to the level of the competition. Right now, last I checked, Navy has two wins. They beat Navy by 7 points. Tulane has one win. They beat Tulane rather unconvincingly with a late runaway. That was an unimpressive performance. And last week, if I'm not mistaken, and Golic, you were just there, Tulsa has three wins, I believe, and they played it to 8 points at the very end. So this is three consecutive weeks now from Cincinnati where they've played to the level of competition. And in a year when eye test could very much factor in, they need to be putting up some style points, which they haven't done each of the last few weeks.
Style points not there yet, but like you said, plenty of time in what's been a chaotic year at the top of college football. Greg, we promise we'll never silence you talking about offensive linemen again on this program. All right, buddy, we'll talk to you soon.
You know, I was so frustrated as a Bama guy. I was so frustrated. I think you guys might have just hit the dump button. I might have dropped the 4-letter word or something. That's how frustrated I was. I don't know.
Hey, listen, angry Greg McElroy is not someone you want to see in the streets. I'll tell you that much.
Thanks, all right, y'all, Greg. Be great, man.
Appreciate it. Greg McElroy, our ESPN college football analyst, joining us on the Goodyear Hotline. All right, coming up next, matchup between the Arizona Cardinals and the San Francisco 49ers featured a potential Coach of the Year candidate and a coach on the hot seat. And before the season, I never would have believed in the order that we will say these two names when we come up next after this word from Vivid Seats. Now, with the safe return of live events, you can actually be there to catch all the action in person with Vivid Seats. That's right. Every alley-oop slam, every one-timer, every sideline grab can be experienced live. And with Vivid Seats rewards, you can earn rewards like free tickets. All you got to do, collect stamps, redeem, and repeat. It's that easy. From upper level to courtside, Vivid Seats has you covered for all the events that matter to you. So, grab your tickets today and cheer on your favorite team from the stands. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, life happens live. An unexpected addition to the coaching hot seat, next on ESPN Radio.
Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, and we're getting into the meat of the NFL season, the midway point. 136 games have been played, Mike, and yesterday, I got to say, there was a surprising outcome in an NFC West matchup out in the Bay Area. Colt McCoy got the start for the Cardinals, not Kyler Murray, who is on a lot of people's short list in terms of MVP frontrunners, and yet he was able to go on the road and get the job done, throwing for over 280 yards and playing a relatively clean game, and what has to be a huge upset win and a win that keeps Arizona in pole position for the number one seed in the NFC.
Yeah, Arizona managed to go out and get the damn thing done. Colt McCoy re-ups his backup quarterback license like you got to do every couple of years. Remind him, hey, I'm worth a few million dollars to hang around here with the clipboard on the sideline and be a great veteran presence in this room. But Chris, if you had told me before the season that going into this game in the NFC West that Cliff Kingsbury would look like a Coach of the Year candidate, and all of a sudden, we'd start finally asking questions about Kyle Shanahan on the other side. I don't know which 49ers blog I saw, and I apologize for not giving this person credit, that said Kyle Shanahan is basically Mark Trestman in Yeezys. I almost spit out my coffee today. But, Chris, the point is, we are starting to get to a time now where, all right, once you draft your supposed quarterback of the future and give up as much as the 49ers did to get there, people are going to start to look at the coach when he is not on the field and your team is as uninspired as it was this weekend against that undermanned Cardinals team.
Well, yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch have been trying to figure out whether or not they had the long-term answer in Jimmy G and then trying to find who the quarterback after Jimmy G would be. They spent so much of their time and effort and resources focused on that one problem that they forget to fill out the rest of the roster. And that's one of the things that the 49ers, when they were competing at a championship level, had. They had really good quality depth, and they lost yesterday to a team that has really good depth that happens to be in their division. And I think that that showed throughout the course of that game. The other thing that I will say is the Arizona Cardinals defense is for real. Like, you got to take them dudes seriously. They're athletic, they're fast, they fly around, and they disrupt the football. And you saw that the scores early on in that game, I mean, the Cardinals were able to take advantage of them. You had two fumbles in the first half, and the Arizona offense turned both of them into points. Now, the one with the Eric Armstead sack on third down, where it ends up being called as a face mask, tough break on the 49ers defense. But again, it's a situation where it capitalized, it leads to points. And then you saw what Arizona's offense was able to do once they started scoring the football. They just kept their foot on the gas. I mean, they had the punt in the first series of the game, and then they didn't punt again until 31 points were on the board late in the third quarter. So, I mean, that just goes to show you the quality of depth that Arizona has on the offensive side of the ball. Because remember, they didn't have Chase Edmonds either, no DeAndre Hopkins as well, and yet that offense was still able to put up 31 points against the 49ers, a division opponent. So, got to tip your cap to Cliff Kingsbury, also the GM for the Arizona Cardinals, Steve Keim. They did an outstanding job of being able to find a way to win a game that they had no business winning.
Yeah, these are program wins. This is like what we talked about when Cooper Rush goes in and helps out the Dallas Cowboys. When you get these backups that come into premier spots. Hell, even looking at the Green Bay Packers a couple of weeks ago, when you get that win against Arizona without some of your marquee receivers, a Brian Gutekunst game, so to speak, in those spots, like, these are the kind of things that reinforce that. And then on the other side, for the 49ers, who a couple years ago were the Super Bowl representatives for the NFC, to give up 150 yards and three touchdowns to James Conner, to let Colt McCoy pass for over 80% against what used to be one of the most dominant pass rushes in the league. Damian Woody, our ESPN NFL analyst, was on SportsCenter with Zubin Mehenti and said soon that fire is going to start to rise to the head, man. Chris, that one Super Bowl season, that one Super Bowl appearance is going to buoy them for a while. Ooh. But we know the clock starts for real when you draft a quarterback and when the foundation that you had built starts to look completely different identity-wise, I can understand why this conversation's finally caught up to him.
No question about it. I mean, they put a lot of resources into Trey Lance, and at some point, you're going to have to get the return on investment. And the more that this team struggles, the more urgency that they're going to have in terms of making sure that Trey Lance gets up to speed so they can sell something to ownership, sell something to the fan base in the way of hope. Because as they're constituted right now, the product that they keep trotting out there week in, week out, it just ain't good enough compared to the standard that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch set early on in their tenure. So, yeah, I'm with Wood. That conversation around Kyle Shanahan is going to start to get a whole lot louder unless they can figure out a way to become a lot more competitive quickly.
Came over to the 49ers on a six-year deal, and it's all of a sudden starting to get to a point where judgment is really coming. But the story of the NFL season so far has been the underdog. We'll check in on how they've done at Vegas next on ESPN Radio.